Bang, bang.
Hello, and welcome to Fang Bangers Podcast. We're chaotic horny friends, rewatching the chaotic horny HBO series True Blood. I'm Lozzie.
And I'm Melissa.
This week, we are discussing Season 1, Episode 11, To Love is to Bury. This episode originally aired November 16th, 2008. It was written and directed by Nancy Oliver.
And our summary from the wiki is, Bill fulfills the conditions of the tribunal sentence, although he and Eric find that Jessica, doesn't quite turn out as expected. Trying to solve the mystery behind her most recent vision, Sookie heads to a pie shop with Sam, and later puts the squeeze on a philandering police officer to get info on a murder suspect. Jason helps clean up Amy's bloody mess, worrying about their future but is unable to break away. Tara's anger over Letty May's refusal to bail her out of jail, more on that later, fuck Letty May, is tempered when Marianne Forrester, a wealthy social worker, comes to her rescue. Disgusted by the hypocrisy of a vamp-bashing state senator, Lafayette decides to pay him a warning visit on the campaign trail. In Bill's absence, a vulnerable Sookie finds comfort in Sam. A distraught, self-doubting Jason finds himself in hot water with Sheriff Burt and Detective Andy again. So I just realized that in our first impressions of the episode, I've just kept in what I believe Elise wrote last week, which is a shit ton of stuff happened in this one, which does seem to be the general pattern.
Yeah, I totally did not realize that this was not your current comment on the current episode, because yeah, a shit ton of stuff is happening in these episodes. This episode specifically comes in so hot and does not let you forget that we are one episode away from the finale of this season. And it's crazy that they're still... What is crazy is that they're seeding so much for future seasons, episodes, whole arcs, new characters in the penultimate episode of the first season. I've said this on one of our other episodes, how I just love watching TV that knew it was going to be TV for a very long time. So they have the luxury of getting the character Jessica in this episode when we are in episode 11 of a 12 episode season. It's fun.
Well, Jessica and Marianne, yes. Right? Like, yes. Those are two huge season two characters. And even like the Lafayette state senator stuff, like I assume, because I can't remember, that basically is stuff that pays off in next season, not in the finale next mm-hmm. week. But it's like they're using this episode to set up season two so they can, or it feels like, and I haven't watched the finale again yet, but it feels like they're using this episode to set up a lot of season two so that they can focus purely on the core whodunit plot for the finale.
Yeah, I'm excited to see that because, you know, spoilers for the rest of our podcast episode, we get the reveal of the killer this episode, and we just have no idea how if Andy Belfour is going to just magically become like a good police officer who can handle this situation. We're going to find out next week.
What? Yeah. Do we think so?
I don't, but
we'll shall see.
He apparently thinks that he is surrounded by assholes and morons and not that he is an asshole and a moron. So, I mean, he's got the faith in himself. We can only hope that gives him some sticking power for next week.
That Andy Belfort is the living embodiment of that maxim that if you meet one asshole a day, that's unfortunate. If everyone you meet is an asshole, then you're the asshole.
Too true.
Right. I think we've sort of succumbed to the worst of our group. just kidding, love. And we're going to do this Elise style, breaking it down plot by plot rather than scene by scene, which is my tedious style. I think this one is better. So shall we first talk about Bill and Jessica?
Yes, Jessica.
Jessica.
Jessica is a character that I adore from this this whole True Blood project, it's kind of a spoiler to say, but she becomes a main character. And I didn't remember that we got her at the end of the first season. I'm thrilled to see her. And we get a little bit more of the True Blood specific vampire lore, because we find out that they don't actually know how new vampires are made, but they know that you do have to be planted in the ground like a tree, snuggle with your maker, and then you wake up a baby vampire.
It's a little bit, is it a cargo cult sort of situation or not? Where, like, if, you know, if we do the activities, then vampires will come, even if they're not sure. Yes, they snuggle in the ground. Pam is watching Bill dig the hole and snuggle in the ground with Jessica, and then fills it back in again because Bill is not trusted not to basically stake Jessica during the night anyway. Pam as well does a very good, I don't know whether she's specifically doing a Bill impression or whether she's just being Pam, but she does say she will become vampire.
I do think that's just how they talk about it, but I love that there, that means that there is this connection between Bill and Pam that I feel like they don't often find common ground, but they do speak about becoming vampire in the same way. Pam thinks this is wonderful for Jessica. Like, she is saying, Bill, you're the maker, you're the hero, you get to teach her this immortality. And he says that Bill tells Pam that he's setting Jessica free. Does he think that waking up and being a mainstream vampire is freedom? Because from what I've seen,
I think
Bill's life, it's not that. Or do you think Bill was really planning on staking her if he wasn't being watched?
No, I think he was planning
on
staking her.
You're going to kill another vampire? That's how you got into this mess.
Well, I think he's basically like trying to logic out that his responsibility was to feed on her and to let her feed on him, but his responsibility ended then in terms of what the Magister wanted from the tribunal. Mm-hmm. I guess like it's a letter of the law rather than spirit of the law argument, I would say.
I think that even though Jessica is happy to be a vampire nearly immediately, I think we should at least note that, like, she did not want this. They basically plucked her out of her neighborhood because she snuck out of her house. That's fucking horrible. You should not turn people who do not want to be turned. You should not do anything to anyone who does not want you to do that thing. And then the show is like, that's not what we're really here to talk about. We're here to talk about how Jessica is this very sheltered girl. And we find out that her mom and dad are very strict with her. She has to do these music lessons. She's always babysitting. I think we can read in some like fundamental Christianity stuff with all of that. The way she's dressed, she's not allowed out at night, all this. And she is fucking thrilled. She immediately goes straight I'm going to kill people. I want to kill them. Who can I kill? When can I kill them?
It definitely feels like she wants to kill her baby sister and her clarinet teacher.
Yes, potentially even her parents.
Yeah, quite possibly. She is, once she's sort of got over the fact that Bill's going to be in trouble and he's like, no, you're a vampire. You're a vampire. She is, as you say, thrilled and not interested at all in hearing that there are rules and restrictions to what she's allowed
to do. Why should there be?
She's like, I've just escaped this world of boring people and rules and restrictions, and now I'm a fucking vampire and I'm not going to take it anymore.
What's also funny
about... I don't want Mr. Boring.
Yeah, and what's also funny about this is that She thinks that just because she gets to be out at night and do violence, that that means that there's not rules. But there are very strict rules in the vampire society. Even if you're not trying to mainstream, that's two sets of rules. That's human rules and vampire rules. The whole reason you got into this mess is because these vampires have to follow very strict rules. But that is for a later Jessica to figure out that no matter what society you live in, the humans or the vampires, there will unfortunately be rules for you to follow. But you still could kill people if you want to. So it's probably a decent trade-off for her, who doesn't seem like she has been able to have much agency in her life until this moment. And she is annoying enough. This is my strategy for if I'm ever kidnapped, which is that I'm just going to be unbearable until the kidnappers kick me out of their van. I used to joke about that with my mom when I was a very small, like a small young person. And she was like, Melissa, you still can't like talk to people in vans. It's fine that you have this very good strategy, which will probably work because you're very annoying. Please go away. But like, you can't do this. But it does work for Jessica because she is just like, why? Until Bill finally gives in and brings her to Eric. And it's like, do you really want to owe Eric another favor? Again, like, how did you get into this mess?
Two things. I kind of think that Bill does want to owe Eric a favor, actually. I think he wants him to show up in his bathtub again. Jessica is so bratty and like foot stompingly childish that this would be so annoying if Deborah Ann Woll wasn't absolutely killing it.
Yes.
She just bursts into this and has so much charisma and so much like screen presence. Like, I would say, other than Pam, she as a character and as a performance, maybe Lafayette as well, she has like the most like the screen that like the camera just focuses on her, and she owns the whole thing this season so far. Even Eric is playing a bit more like mysterious, subdued bad boy, so it's not as flamboyant. But yeah, she's what an incredible performance. And I like, it was great then to see her show up in Daredevil some years later as well.
I have enjoyed the escape room films that she is in.
Oh, I don't know about what are the escape rooms?
They are these like PG-13 horror movies where you get put into this like escape room, and then when you don't get the clues right, you actually die.
Is this like Saw Light?
A little bit, but the casts are young and cute, and the escape rooms are like really clever. And yes, people die, but it is a PG-13 movie, so there's some safety in that.
So two characters have sex and they both die, is what we're saying.
I don't remember if there is sex. There are like couples, but I think that you don't get to spend a lot of nice time with them because they've gotten wrapped up into this escape room experience.
Okay, do we have anything more to say about Bill and Jessica? They only have like a couple of scenes, just the two of them.
Yeah, so. I think that it's just exciting that we're finally in this era because I love Jessica so much.
Yeah. Yeah, she's got some interesting stuff ahead of her for sure.
Oh my God. Like, one of the most eye-rolly things about this show is a Jessica thing that is coming up soon. I cannot wait to complain about it. That is a little tease.
Right, Tara and Letty Mae, fucking hell. So Tara, who is very clearly drunk, having crashed her car, tells the police about the naked woman with a big Paul Bunyan pig. What the fuck is Paul Bunyan pig? Is this some reference that I do not get?
Paul Bunyan apparently is like an American thing. I don't know exactly what it is. I wish I would have Googled it, because now I'm just going to tell you what I think Paul Bunyan is. And I know that it's a thing people
to be
know
honest,
about.
That's probably
but
better.
It's like, he's like a big, like mythical, like lumberjack man, I think.
Okay.
Like, I always picture, you know, like the story of like Jack and the Beanstalk, where
is it like a Davy Crockett type thing?
Sure. I mean, I don't think he wears like a raccoon hat or whatever.
Right.
But Paul Bunyan is just like a giant man who was like a lumberjack type.
Okay.
Like the Bigfoot of forest men, I guess.
Oh, okay.
I don't, you know, right. I made that up.
So it just means
that's just
big.
What I think.
Okay.
But yeah, a big ass.
I mean, all I have in my head now is the Monty Python lumberjack song. So
yeah, big ass Paul Bunyan pig is just like a big, like larger than life, can't be real. But I'm right. looking at it like giant pig, which you cannot anticipate being in the middle of the road when you are drunk driving. So for, in that point, Tara is not wrong.
Yeah, it is tough to believe her if you're a police officer and someone says, yeah, I'm not drunk, but I crashed because a naked lady with a massive pig was walking.
Yeah, on the other hand, Tara is very obviously intoxicated. So, you know, there was really nothing for Kenny to do.
Yeah. So she gets arrested and taken to jail, and she phones up Letty Mail to bail her out. Who won't? Do you want to talk about this for a little bit?
Yeah, I would like you to talk so much about it. I'll just say that, like, she calls Letty Mae. They have this nice relationship that they've been working on for, like, 3 days now. Letty Mae takes forever. Tara's like, why did it take you so long to shower to come get me? Letty Mae had to go to the church to consult the church people before she comes here, and then she refuses to bail out Tara. I fucking hate it, and I know that there is a prepared rant for this section.
It is the most selfish of any character, I think, on this show. And that includes all the vampires who don't give a shit about anyone. Like, this is so, like, proactively, vindictively selfish to someone who was literally the only person who helped you. Your daughter, on top of that. It is so performative. It is so unbelievably hypocritical. And this is literally like the only time Tara's been in this trouble, and she just cuts her off at the knees. As Tara says, you know, or she, Letty Mae says to her, she can't have her in her house, because she's a danger to her soul. And Tara points out that the only reason she has a house is because of Tara. The ingratitude, the self-centeredness. Being English, this word is probably more in my vocabulary than it is in everyone's, but I try and deploy it meaningfully. What a fucking cunt, honestly.
I completely agree. There are no notes. I just think that Letty Mae treats Tara as if they are not mother and daughter, like as if they are just... Yeah. Like cohabitating adults almost, because on one hand, if that were true, I could see what Letty Mae's doing. Like, you're an adult, you made this mistake, like maybe you do need, but like you said, this is the very first time Tara's ever been in trouble like this, and I think that she has earned a few with Letty Mae because of the fact that you're not just two adults that are living in a house together and like trying to work through your, and I mean this metaphorically, demons. You are a mother and a child, and it's like, I feel after everything Letty Mae has put Tara through, that Tara has earned 1,000,002 chances. Like, there's no world in which Letty Mae would be justified cutting Tara off, but if Tara went no contact with Letty Mae, I would support that 10,000%.
She exploits Tara so much. She exploits her, like, to bail her out. She exploits her for money for the exorcism with Miss Jeanette. She exploits her inherent parent-child relationship that she has, and what sort of situation that puts Tara in, and I fucking hate it. And the fact that she then, you know, stops to pray, to go to the church to pray before she picks her daughter up, the fact that she performatively says she loves her when clearly those are just words and absolutely no actions. And, there are monsters in this show, and Letty Mae is worse than all of them. I really feel that
and
way.
And it pushes Tara into the arms of this other woman. And I think the show has been doing a really good job of building up this relationship between Tara and Letty Mae, between Tara and Sookie, between Tara and Sam. So we see that the people that Tara has spent the most time with, she has these very fraught and complex relationships with because of her anger, because of her childhood. And now there is this fresh-faced woman who seems to understand all of this. And it was very easy for her to get Tara separated from all these people who care about her and like living in a fancy house, apparently. Like, it is, it does seem, it's like too good to be true. I think that's all there is really to say about it. It's very nice. It is some on paper. This is something that Tara very much needs in this moment, but it does feel too good to be true.
Yeah. And it's, this is, Marianne Forrester as played by Michelle Forbes of Star Trek The Next Generation and Battlestar Galactica and Homicide: Life on the Streets. And she's a social worker, and so she pays Tara's bill, invites her over, but very clearly doesn't tell her what to do. She gives her the options and invites her. Now, we can also see from the sort of wider picture that Tara is in a corner and basically has no other options. But still, she doesn't force her to do it. She makes her, she lets her choose and all have this impression of choice, and that, you know, is, again, you can see the manipulation in that, I think. So they're, again, they're setting her up to get for you to go, something's not right here. Why is this social worker have a mansion and and a red convertible, and she's not a Jesus person, and so, you know, she seems, as you say, too good to be true. And I think we're immediately supposed to believe that she's too good to be true. Not least because she's played by Michelle Forbes, who, let's be honest, always looks a bit sketchy.
Yeah, it's like definitely perfect casting.
Anyway, that's that. And yeah, fuck off, Letty Mae. Honestly. Now, speaking of characters who can fuck off, Jason and Amy.
Oh, they are not having a good time. They're really not having a good time. The aftermath of Staking Eddie is still playing out because they have to clean. It's horrible. Jason can't handle it. He's like vomiting.
Yeah, he's not having a good time. He's pretty furious. The mask on both of them really slips when they start insulting each other. He calls her a Yankee bitch and she calls him a dumb fucking hillbilly.
Yeah, it's like, well, for one, Yankee bitch is one of my like favorite TV and movie insults, and it is only because it is used in the movie Sweet Home Alabama, which was one of my mother's favorite movies when I was growing up, so I've seen it like 250 times. And he says, you know, you turned into some hoity-toity Yankee bitch, and I'd like nothing better right now than to piss you off. And so when I heard Jason call Amy a Yankee bitch, I was like, did you grow up on Sweet Home Alabama too?
I definitely feel like dumbass Jason would performatively refuse to watch Sweet Home Alabama, but would watch it on his own on his TV.
Yeah, and then he after would he's got home steal from, an insult from the script. yeah, and she's taking this opportunity of Jason's fractured emotional state to be like, you were with me the whole time we were doing this, so now we have to clean up together. And it's like, that is just categorically untrue. Jason did not want to do this. Jason did not want you to stake Eddie. You staked Eddie. Honestly, if I'm Jason, I'm not fucking cleaning up your vampire soup. I didn't stake the vampire. You staked the vampire in my basement. Now I have two problems.
Yeah. Yeah, he's pretty pissed off. And yeah, Amy, he sort of they still have a lot of vampire soup, so it needs to be cleaned up. And he starts working on it. And she's, so this is a very small point, but She is running, like, the sink disposal and just, like, pushing vampire bits into it. And there's no water running. And I'm like, that is going to fuck up Jason's sink disposal. Like, you savage.
Yeah, and I just...
It's the worst thing Amy has done.
Eddie would like a word. I just need to know if, like, does vampire soup not have the same bee juice effects?
I guess not, because otherwise surely they would just, like, from pure exposure, given what a drop can do.
Oh my god.
Right. It feels like the fact that they're not tripping balls must mean that the act of a dead vampire removes the vampire magic.
I mean,
magic.
That totally makes sense, but it's just like, as I was seeing her putting it down the garbage disposal, I was like, now are you just wasting these drugs that you're so obsessed with? Like, this is crazy. but I do presume that the first time she staked a vampire, she tried it and it didn't work. So here we are.
Even cut with aspirin.
Right. There's an episode of New Girl where Jessica Day thinks that she can get high off crystal meth through her chest skin because she, like, put allegedly crystal meth into, like, her bra. It ends up being... aquarium rocks, but that is your New Girl corner for this episode of True Blood.
I was like, it's no Melissa appearance on any podcast without a New Girl reference.
I mean, they just, they speak to me. I can't help it.
No, I mean, like, there's been a Blue Sky thread saying, like, 4 TV shows to get to know me. And I was wondering if all 4 of yours were just New Girls. So.
Pretty much. At least 1 and 2.
Anyway, so they then both go off to work because obviously Amy still needs the job at Merlot's. I don't know why she's working there. It makes no goddamn sense. And Jason is going back with his crew of the Renard County Roadworks Department or whatever the heck that's called. I noted this time that both Hoyt and Renee just have their normal slightly sweaty t-shirts, whereas Jason has cut his sleeves off and cut a little V.
Gotta show off the guns for the ladies.
Just to show off the guns. Yeah, not just the ladies. I'm just like...
I was speaking for Jason.
Okay.
Yeah, he... is trying to get Hoyt and Renee to hang out with him tonight because he does not want to go home to Amy. Hoyt can't because he has plans with his mother and he likes to go to baby showers because there's food and they play fun little games. And, like, I just love Hoyt so much. And I especially love that they've given him quite little to do, but he does something in most of the episodes since we've met him. And they're all adorable. Every single
it just
instance.
Goes to character, right? Like, they built the character up really nicely in ways that A, make you love him, but also just, like, nicely build up the character and give you a little bit of sense.
Yeah,
of,
like, don't you
on.
Just like this good old country boy? Like, he's not a Jason Stackhouse. You know, he is a
cronk. He is a himbo.
Yes. A true himbo. Yeah, so Jason tells his friends, oh, I don't want to go home because I'm having this, like, issue with Amy. Hoyt doesn't want Jason to leave Amy because she is so pretty. And so, therefore, she's definitely a keeper. Come on, Jason. But he says that she's into V, a fib. He says that it wouldn't surprise him if she has slept with vampires. And Renee says, oh, well, these things, you know, got a way of working out. And I am just, my eyeballs are so big, the biggest side eye. Renee, what do you mean by this? I wonder if we'll find out in this episode.
We do find out in this episode what he means by this. But you know, Hoyt is basically pushing him to, like, give it another chance, you know. And so Jason, you know, goes back late. Amy and him sort of reconcile. She's cooks for him a lovely little note that she learned to cook from her maid who was French.
Cool.
Okay, whatever. Anyway, like, one of the things that Jason had said before they left was, you have to be completely off the V. There can be none of it in the house. She totally agrees to this. She's all in favor. And then just after they've reconciled and they've eaten their meal together, she's saved one small little drop of V for them just to close the circle, to finish their journey.
They met on V. They have to end their V era. It's the circle that she says, I don't even care about the blood, but the circle is important to me. So I'll do the V by myself if you're not down. So it's like, I thought it wasn't the blood. It was the Jason circle, but it's fine if Jason doesn't participate. It's like, I love you, Jason, but it's like, this is such obvious, like, and not even, what's the word? Like, complex. It's not even like high level manipulation. It's not, you know, it's just like.
Yeah, I mean, like, it is Jason. Like, the idea that you need high-level manipulation is perhaps.
But it's just, like, a bold strategy to be, like, that blatantly hypocritical in, like, over the same sentence when you're, like, trying to argue to get someone to agree to. But I mean, obviously it works because he does the V. Like, she's not going to do it by himself, which obviously this is so chivalrous. He doesn't want her to have to do these drugs alone, even though she would be perfectly content to.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's nothing in it for him at all to do it. He's definitely still doesn't have some desire to do it. But yeah, like, you're right. The hypocrisy, because she was also the one who's like, we don't lie together to each other. That's not part of our relationships. Like, you lied to him all the fucking time.
You lied to him all through that dinner when you knew there was V juice in the fridge and you didn't tell him. So there.
Anyway, they do V. They have a very pleasant seeming trip where they have sex and then or don't have sex. I've lost track of whether or not they've ever had sex. It's like, and then they have a nice dream where they're running through sprinklers in the sunshine in their underpants, which honestly seems like a fun thing.
Yeah, they're having
the
absolute best time. You just know the sprinkler water's warm and it's just like a warm, like, non-humid, like, 85 degrees outside. Like, it's the best time. And then someone just creeps into Jason's house and just strangles Amy. And it's, like, not funny. But I still laughed a little. And she just floats away out of their trip. And then Jason wakes up and it is so fucking cringy because he's like, earthquake on the bed, but she's dead. So then he has to be like, oh, no, you're dead. It's awful. I mean, it's honestly really secondhand embarrassment, hard to watch for Jason.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. The earthquake bit is like, it is so childish and in the context of a dead woman in your bed.
It's real bad. Jason calls the police himself and says, like, you guys need to come over here, because he finally, like, can't rationalize away that, like, these women are dying within moments, hours of being with him. And he says, when he's being interrogated by Bud and Andy, like, or he's not being interrogated, they're giving him the space to confess. But he's like, I don't know why I would have done it. And I have no memory of doing it. But they're all dead, so I obviously would have done it. And it's just like, this ordeal has just broken Jason's brain. And that is very sad. And you put in the notes that you feel bad for Jason here. And I just added in my color a ton of exclamation points. Because I feel very bad for Jason here. And it just sucks how much Andy has been dedicated to the fact that Jason did this, because he starts talking about how you hated my dad, you hated Don. And Jason's like, no, I didn't. Like, when have I ever hated a woman who was down to bed me? Like, that is not my style. And I presume it's never been his style. So it sucks. I think he called and said, like, I maybe did this. And so I guess if you need to put him in jail until you can get this straightened out, I understand that. But on the other hand, it's like, I really wish that the Bon-Ton Police Department could have like some sympathy for Jason because he's clearly unwell.
Yeah. Well, they also accuse him of, I'd say there's two points. That one is that they accuse him of killing his grandma, which he absolutely loses his shit at because he obviously didn't do that. But secondly, and more importantly, the phrase to bed someone, I think, is one that we should use more in common parlance. And I'm interested to explore how often you use it.
I think that I heard it somewhere recently. You know, it's kind of new. That was one of my first times trying it out.
I think you should steer hard into doing more and more. I think of I that. Will. It's a phenomenal
yeah, I'll keep that one. yeah, and Jay. Okay, they're locking Jason up, even though he didn't confess. But like, dead girl at his house. Okay, so.
But I think we should save this point until we do the Sam and Sookie storyline.
Okay. We can.
Just because we haven't explained where on earth this fact.
Yes, okay, I'm with you. And I do have 2 points about the facts, is that when it comes in, a girl's on the, like, police office manager lady is on the phone and she's gossiping with her friend. Oh my God, guess who they brought in for the murder of these women? It's Jason Stackhouse. And she's like, girl, we got so lucky.
when he dials 911...
Yeah,
the person answers it, and he's like, "Is Jason Stackhouse?" She's like, "Oh, hi, Jason. How are you doing?" And he's like, "Not the time.
You got it. No flirting right now. This is not a personal call."
On 911, or whatever the hell it is. Okay, Lafayette. This is a very sort of short couple of Lafayette scenes in this.
This is just playing out from. What happened? I don't even think it was exact. It wasn't the last thing we saw from him, because I think the last thing we saw from him was him being upset with Jason. I might be misremembering that, but we saw one of the last things we saw Lafayette doing was meeting with this senator man. So like, we know him, and then it's again with the hypocrisy. All these characters are doing. Well, I wouldn't call the senator man a character, but Renee's pissed off that he's such a hypocrite. Like, he's running on this platform of homophobia and like anti-vampires.
Not Renee, Lafayette. But
yeah, and Lafayette's pissed.
Yeah. I mean, I find it a little bit surprised that Lafayette is surprised that this guy is a massive hypocrite. Like, what did you think?
I think that's
fair. I can see why he's pissed, because he's, you know, right to be pissed. And but I'm surprised. Like, I kind of feel like Lafayette is a little bit more worldly and more aware than that. Like, I don't know. It's not like it's not a somewhat transactional business that he's in.
I think that's true. I wonder if, because Lafayette also has this other thing going on, like with Jason and Eddie, that he's just like not dealing with shit today. I'm just not in the mood to hear this speech you're giving, because it's hypocritical, because I'm already angry about this other shit I can't do. So I'm going to your little event and I'm going to scare you. So that's like one thing
and he
that
dresses
like
Lafayette up and
could do. I mean, he can't fix the Eddie situation. That just has to play out for him however it's going to.
Yeah, and he gets Terry to cover him at Malotte's, and then, dresses up in a suit and tie and looks a little bit like Charles Gunn from Angel. I don't know if you watched Angel, but he looks so different from his. Like, it is like, it does take half a second to go, oh shit, that's Lafayette, if you don't recognize the voice, right?
Yeah, one quick note, listening to politicians gives Terry Belfleur seizures. So I think that that's relatable. And he just really wants to be watching his home decor programs. Please let him have a chill time behind the bar.
It is remarkable how different Terry and Andy Belfleur are.
Yeah, like 180% personalities, or degrees, I guess it is.
180% degrees personalities, okay. Anyway, Lafayette turns up there, basically threatens to blackmail the guy, which surely he could have expected to happen. Anyway, we shall see what happens.
That's a good point.
I suspect not.
Lafayette
next week.
Should have maybe expected that the senator was a Republican. And the senator should have expected that Lafayette is not a person to cross.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I think I it's interesting because, like, it's he starts off by being anti-vampire. And I kind of think, like, Lafayette would probably have let that go. But he's also then randomly homophobic at the end of his speech as well. And Lafayette's like, nope, fuck off, not happening. And I think it's similar to, like, the burger with AIDS scene from earlier. Like, there is that is, like, a line that Lafayette's not prepared to allow, basically. It's like, nope, you are not allowed to do that shit. Fuck off.
Yeah, so it will be interesting to see what comes of this.
Yeah.
Both what happens with, like, Eddie, because that could still come home for Lafayette, but also with this politician. And, like, Lafayette, and I'm just completely spitballing because I really don't remember, but, like, Lafayette in politics in general could be exciting. Like, if he gets into, like, advocacy of some sort.
Yes, that would be incredible. Right, Sookie and and Sam.
Sam is like, I'm gonna protect you forever, Sookie. And she's like, well, you can't spend 24 hours a day with me for the rest of my life. And he's like, sure I can. And it's like, this is so weird. You guys were just fighting. You're both dating other people. Tara and Sookie are best friends. Like, they're just not treating this as weird as they should. And it's very weird.
And as established, Sam is a douchebag who is constantly, like, negging Sookie for basically, like, and judging her and being a creep around her. So, like, the fact that she knows he's a dog now, which she was pissed off about 5 seconds ago, it's such a weird energy. It's so weird that they start flirting pretty much straight away, and then they're flirting more in the car when they drive to. So Sookie remembers some details that she read in the killer's mind about a waitress who he'd murdered, and she remembers a name tag, which was Cindy, and the restaurant, which was Big Paddy's Pie House in Bunky, which is a remarkable name for a town, I have to say. So anyway, they go on a road trip together to Bunky to see what they can find out further. And yes, they're just flirting in the car with each other the whole time. And Sookie's doing this as well. Like, I don't want to, like, as much as I don't like Sam, I'm not letting Sookie off the hand for this, because she is absolutely engaging in it.
Yeah, 100%. Like, I wonder if she's just, like, relieved that Sam wants to be her friend again, like, after the whole shape-shifting dog reveal. But, I mean, it's just going too far. And they, I mean, the flirting, like, honestly, like, ramps up through the episode. You know, that's how we get to the end of the episode. But I can kind of understand that they're having this, like, day of hijinks and investigations and, like, Nancy Drew shit. Yeah. And so they're, like, excited. Adrenaline's going, like, we solve crimes.
We nearly died. We solve crimes.
Yes. What and happened? I mean, like, at least Sam was, like, 100. When we finally get to them and we find out that, like, Sam's sleeping on Sookie's couch because of what happened in Merlot, I'm like, I am prepared to give Sam the point, because we did not hear him, like, be mean and patronizing to Sookie. So I'm going to assume that he wasn't, in order to end up staying in his house. Like, maybe he was like, hey, Sookie, I'll come stay at your house if you're worried. And she was just like, yeah, that's fine. Instead of, you know, conceivably Sam being like, you're a stupid idiot, why would you ever go home alone, you know? So I'm like, oh, he's staying on the couch, he's not turned into a dog. Like, point for Sam, he put that behind him to, like, protect Sookie. And then immediately it's like, oh, I could spend 24 hours a day with you for the rest of your life. That's like essentially a marriage proposal. Like what?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly. It is straight on there. Like it's not. He's straight back into it. Like there's no there. But she encourages it.
She does.
You know.
Yeah, they end up at some other sheriff's department, and these are possibly even worse.
Well, but before that, they go to the
pie house and find out. This is honestly like a pretty like intricate scene for them just to be at the pie shop and find out that the girl who was murdered was like a transplant in this town. Her and her brother were there. People didn't really know them. And then she was murdered and her brother disappeared. His name was Drew Marshall. They didn't investigate the disappearance. Probably unrelated. He's definitely not a murderer. And so this is what leads me to believe that like this is possibly an even worse police department than Bon Tom. Because at least Bon Tom is still investigating the murder of these women in some capacity. This other town, Cindy's murdered, Drew's gone, and they're like, well, looks like closed book. This is fine.
Vampires were involved, or vampers, as the guy in the pie shop calls them. Yeah. So the police sheriff, or whatever he is, doesn't give a shit, basically. And as soon as he sees vampire bites on Sookie's arm, which is, as we know, not Bill's favorite artery to feed from, so who knows what. But also, like, Bill fed on her that recently that she still has those very clear red marks on her arm, and yet she's still, like, going off on with Sam and everything.
Yeah, she... I mean, Sookie's going through it, but these are weird choices. I think that they're weird choices. There's a God Hates Fangs poster in this police department, which is just, like, fucking terrible. It's like, have your own opinion. I mean, don't, but I guess do. But you can't have, like, anti-legal rights human person, vampire person. Like, they have rights. Murdering them is a crime.
Well,
like, you can't have, like, God Hates Fangs in your police department.
Well, specifically, as it's clearly a analogy to God Hates Fags.
Yes, 100%.
As a circle. Like, imagine a police department with that up.
And when you say it like that, it's displayed. Like, I can imagine that very clearly. You know, okay. I haven't actually seen it, but that, yeah. So it's like, I guess they just are, they're doing a good job, like, with the metaphor, because I'm being like, it's so ridiculous that that would be there. And then when you point out the analog to real life, I'm like, well. So that's terrible. And this man is not that helpful. But he at least says he'll send the facts. And we find out that he does.
Well, he only says he'll send the facts because Sookie blackmails him. Because she's read his mind that he's having an affair. Because his wife won't have sex with him. And therefore it's okay to have an affair.
She goes to church.
That's how that works.
He's having an affair with the church lady.
She's a good Christian.
It's fine.
Who's Debbie?
Yeah. I wonder if Debbie and his wife have an arrangement. Like, I'm not really into this guy anymore. Because he's like, my wife doesn't want to have sex with me. That's why I can have an affair. And it's like, I assume they all go to the same church. And I would just love it if his wife was like, you know what, Debbie? You're having problems with your husband?
Do you think... Do you think his wife is going to the what was this place called, Bunky, equivalent of Fantasia, basically?
I hope so. I would love that for her.
Yeah, good for you. Good
She's
for you.
She's satisfied. That's why she doesn't need her shitty cop husband. I like this narrative.
This is live fan fiction with Lozzie and Melissa. For some of the most minor characters.
Yes, an unnamed wife.
Who don't even show up on screen.
Yeah, so Sookie and Sam are in the way, aren't going home, and they're continuing to flirt. And now it's cute and funny that Sam turns into a dog. I mean, it just went from something we're going to fight about forever to being cute and funny, like, so quickly.
Yeah, so Suki asks, you know, does he love Tara? And to give Sam the credit that I never want to give him, I think he at least answers this question honestly. I think he basically says, look, I like her a lot. I don't know. It's really tough to have a relationship with her, all of which is true. And also, again, it's been like a week. Suki, on the other hand, admits she loves Bill, which is also what makes the rest of this episode insane to me. But she says she loves Bill, but that he's not there and he would have felt her being in trouble, and his vampire politics are more important than her.
He would have felt like her fear. He didn't come. Obviously, that means that he's never coming back, ever. Because she got scared one time.
Yeah. And, like, he specifically knew she was going to be in trouble and specifically left Sam there because of that. And, yeah, it's been a day or so. Like, chill the fuck out.
Yeah. The vampire politics comment is, like, Suki, what are you not getting about the fact that, like, this is a hierarchy in the vampire society, and because Bill is a bottom bitch. Like, he is in trouble. He doesn't make the rules. He is on the, he is, and he's like a social outcast of the vampires. He has no power. So if there are politics involved, like, he is gonna take a couple days.
And the politics are specifically that he killed a vampire who was trying to kill you.
She honestly thinks that if she could have testified and said, yeah, that vampire was gonna kill me, then they would have been like, all right, cool, Bill. You're definitely 100% great. And it's like, Bill tries it on the guy. I know he has, like, an official name, but I can't think of, like, what that title is.
It's that guy who's the bad guy in everything.
Yeah, exactly.
Even Zillage, that guy.
That was a...
The Magister.
Magister. Bill tells the Magister that, and he's like, I don't give a fuck about a human. You killed a vampire. And because they're basically saying it's like, yeah, you should have just let the vampire feed on her and then we could pull out his fangs and that's all good because they don't care about the human. So, I mean, this disconnect for Suki with that, he should have brought her so she could finally get some fear. Like.
Yeah. I think, yeah. I mean, he also should not have brought her, absolutely. But, like, everything he did was like, this is a shit situation. I kind of got you into it, but I have to, in order to get you out of it, I have to go and do this for 2 days. And, like, you're basically saying, I love him, but I'm still going to flirt with this guy who I've already said is a douchebag multiple times. And who has, you know, by my perspective, lied to me and betrayed me.
And who is dating actively my best friend.
And is your boss.
They didn't break up. They have not had a conversation since Tara got mad because Sam did not want to have sex with her seemingly in public. Like, you don't
while
just break
smashed.
Up.
Yeah.
Like, that. It's not like an automatic breakup. Like, that's crazy shit. And the thing is Bill maybe couldn't feel Sookie's fear, or he could and he just ignored it because he was busy. But what he cannot ignore is this horniness.
No.
The horn gets turned up and Bill immediately pops back in.
Pops back in and pops his teeth back out.
Sam can, I mean, Bill's obviously taking it easy on Sam because Sam, it seems like, can kind of
hold
his own.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, I mean, yeah, I know Bill is going easy on you. Suki screams at the top of her lung, stop fighting, you stupid men. No notes.
Yeah, like, as much as I'm like, also, like, so other breakups that didn't happen were Suki and Bill before Suki starts making out with Sam. But yeah, I can't really complain about that line. It was pretty good, pretty well delivered.
Oh, yeah, because it's like, you don't need to do a brawl in my house. At least take it outside, for one. But you don't need to do a brawl in my house because you're mad that I kissed someone else. It's like, that's a conversation you get to have with me. Like, Bill's not willing to beat Suki up, so.
No.
He has, you know, it's just, it's not great. She rescinds Bill's invitation. Suke, don't.
Don't. And his fang boner immediately goes. Melissa is for the people who don't understand that podcasting is a visual medium. Melissa is miming his teeth going in and out, and has wonderfully manicured white nails to match her wonderfully tooth-acured
my pointy vampire teeth. Yeah, I did not even. I noticed that my nails worked as vampire teeth the first time I did the fangs, and so then I had to keep going, obviously, because I thought it was funny. Yeah. Sam is like, oh my God, Sookie, how could you want to be with him? And she's like, literally, Sam, I don't want to be with anyone. And I'm like, Sookie, as much as this goes against like my personal beliefs of interpersonal relationships. Like, Sookie, if you don't want Sam to think that you are open to being with him, like, stop making out with him on your couch.
Yeah. Yeah. Stop flirting with him at breakfast and in the car, and stop making out with him on the couch.
Because like, Sookie understands that Sam doesn't listen to her words. So it's like, yeah. I understand you've told the man multiple times you don't want to be with him. And yeah, a little make out between friends could be okay. But it's like, you have to know that if you're dealing with a man like Sam, your actions are going to speak louder than words. And if your actions is a full-blown make-out session on the couch, I mean, it's like, this is why there ends up being a man brawl in your living room. And how Sam still thinks he has like the high ground afterwards. He really thinks that Sookie saying, I rescind your invitation, Bill, equals
means that
is
she
the same,
chose him.
I'm with Sam now.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, everyone here is like, please have a nap. Like, you all need some space. You all need a nap. I'm like, Sookie, when's the last time you had a solid meal? Like, I just, the decision making capabilities are not great between these three right now.
Yeah, Sam reaches out for her, and she basically like recoils at his touch as well. Like, so, yeah. Which, yeah, I mean,
does
I, again,
not like I, affection after a tiff.
But then don't like make out with the guy, for fuck's sake, Sookie. Like, honestly.
I think, like, Sookie does not have a lot of dating experience. And so I can believe that this is a lesson that she hasn't learned yet, because we all have to learn these things on our own. But it's like, the last person that you can casually make out with is someone who's already been emotionally possessive towards you.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
This is how you end up having to like break up with people you're not dating over and over again. And it's like,
oh yeah. Like,
I wish the solution would be the man listens to your words and takes them at face value, even if, or like the person, like, listen to my words, not my emotional makeouts. But it's like, it's just not true, Sookie. It's never going to be true. You can't make out with Sam unless you want to date him.
Yeah, to provide a contextual story from my own backstory about 20 years ago, asking a girl if they want to go out for a date, them saying, no, I don't really see you that way, and then two nights later when you're all out and drunk, them kissing you and going, I just wanted to see what it was like to kiss you. It's not a fun time for anyone.
It's inappropriate. It is inappropriate behavior. Like,
yeah.
People are terrible. Like, dating is terrible.
Yeah, I mean, particularly, I would say that teenagers and early 20s are very terrible.
It's a fucking hot mess out here.
We're all idiots.
Yeah, so then Sam fucks off, and the end of the episode, the cliffhanger.
Then we cut back to the police department, as you were saying earlier, and Jason is being led to the cells, and a fax comes through.
And it gets put under a stack of... this is, again, the show just trusting the audience to be paying attention. Smartphones weren't that popular in 2009. I don't even know if the iPhone existed yet. I think it maybe had been out for like a year or two. And so it's like they don't expect people to be on their phone. So they do a whole entire reveal just visually. Like, no one except for the audience even sees the facts of Drew Marshall. And it is Renee!
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun. Dun, dun, dun. I looked up a contemporary recap because I don't actually think that that photo looks enough like Renee that I would be like, oh my God, I know who the killer is.
I mean, I think that's partially true, but at the same time would say it doesn't look like anyone else in the show apart from Renee.
True. Yeah, so that's the cliffhanger.
I will say that more importantly, I can't remember the actor's name who plays Renee. He does not look like a Drew Marshall. Like, he looks like a Renee. He does not look like a Drew Marshall.
He does. I agree with that.
So I guess we must rank the cliffhangers.
Yeah, and this is a conversation I've had about a couple of these cliffhangers, which is like, if it's a reveal, is that the same as like a real cliffhanger? Because like Gran being dead, our number one cliffhanger, is like, holy shit, what is going to happen next? And that just feels more dramatic and more worthy of being at the top of the cliffhanger list. Like, I think it's fun that we get this like this visual reveal of who the killer is, and then we have a whole entire episode to like hope the characters can figure it out too, because it's like this got put in a stack. But anyway, this whole speech is just to say I still think that this ends up towards the bottom of the list.
Yeah, I think it's an odd one because I don't remember them. I don't remember what it felt like the first time and whether I knew it was Renee or not. Like, I'm watching this knowing that it's Renee.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, there is very little element of surprise. It's just a, oh my God, a crucial bit of evidence has been mislaid by an incompetent police department. And how is going to be the race against time till it accidentally falls on the floor and someone picks it up and goes, whoa.
Did Sam and Stuck even call the police department and tell them the context for what the facts was going to be?
Yeah, if they did, then we certainly don't know about it. And the police are obviously like distracted because they think they've caught the murderer, which is Jason, right? So, I mean, I'm thinking about this and I'm going, to me, there feels like a definite split right in the middle of where we have. So we've got number five, we've got Long Shadow Attacks, Suki. And number six, we've got Bill feeding on and changing Jessica. And then at number seven, we've got Suki turning up at Bill's house with the weird eyes back tattoo vampire. So I kind of feel like we're in about the right space there.
I think that I like it for the new number seven, because I think that there is, for me at least, a more cliffhanger-y element on like, holy shit, Bill's going to have a vampire child now.
Yes, I agree. And I think, that's the one I want to do. Yeah, I agree. So this is our new number seven. The killer is a fax of Renee.
A fax
itself is a pretty shocking concept.
I know. And I would love to say that they're just completely obsolete and this is just so silly technology. But my insurance company literally wants faxes for my prescriptions. Like, I don't even have that equipment. I can't send you that.
Boggling. So we have two new characters. We have touched on them already, so I don't think we need to go into too much details. But do you want to talk a little bit about Jessica?
Yeah, I just want to officially welcome Jessica to the character list. Yeah, we talked a lot about, it seems like she's from like a very conservative background. She's very excited about being a vampire. There are definitely going to be hijinks with this person. We still have to find out how Suki feels about Bill having a child, if she even ever is going to care, because she rescinded his invitation. It's so exciting. We're only going to get one more episode with this character, and it's like a wait for a second season to spend more time with this girl. Like, they're just really setting up a lot to be excited about with this character, and I love it. And I feel the same about Marianne Forster.
Yeah. Michelle Forbes is always just sort of like looming. she sort of always just seems to loop. There's always some portentous thing happening with her. We learn that she's apparently a social worker, that she's not a Jesus person, that she gets dirty too, and that she has a red convertible and she doesn't give a shit where she parks it, and a mansion. So, but yeah, very, very interesting to see how these two characters develop over the next couple of seasons.
Yeah.
So what is most chaotic? Do you want to go first on this?
For me, Baby Vampire Jessica's like whole energy is pure chaos. And I'm obsessed with her like whining about being told she can't kill people. Like, she really wants to. Please.
Yeah, I mean, I had a couple of other ones, which was when Bill is waiting to turn her, him and Pam are talking off, and he says, "I find myself wondering if you were ever truly human." And Pam just says, "Thank you," and just pushes Jessica's corpse into an open grave with her foot. Spectacular. Pam, one scene, stolen it again. Wonderful.
I can't believe and then Bill even thought that she would like be offended by her saying that, by him saying that.
And then Jessica starts swearing when she's a vampire. And then she's like, "Oh, that's a bad word.
That's a really bad one. What are all the other bad words so I can say them?"
And then what's most horny? Less of possibly the least horny episode.
Yeah, I mean, it is not a very horny episode, and I would refuse to give it to like Sam and Sookie making out.
And also Amy and Jason having a V trip and then her dying in the middle of it.
Yeah, especially in a rewatch, because like I knew she was about to die there. Yeah. I definitely had much more. I thought that her dying when they were in their like magic bee land was like one of the most devastating things I had ever like even considered the first time I watched this. And it's funny because that just like really did not emotionally affect me at all this time. So I had much different sentiments about like relationships and just like people in general, because I was very broken up about that the first time.
Were you more positive on Amy first time?
I have to imagine that I was.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, now it's just like, yeah, but she's awful, so I don't give a shit.
Yeah, see, bitch. She's dead. My horny moment in this episode is just like Jessica's whole thing when Eric asks her if she wants to learn how a real vampire feeds. She like snaps out of her brattiness. She is like so focused and she's like, "Yes, sir." And
yeah, he also says, "Sit down and shut up" to her. And also, Eric, I think, is our winner.
Yeah, so she's very horny for the full vampire experience. And, like, also, I think this is the first time she has shut up long enough to get a real good look at Eric, so.
Yeah. Yeah, his hair already looks better than it did in the first time we saw him. It was, like, lanky and a bit greasy. Now it's starting to get a bit more volume and cleanliness. And he's also going by the Jason Stackhouse rule of, we cut off our sleeves in this house. Right. Anything we want to talk about for books and spoilers? You've got a point here, right?
Yes, this is not going to be a spoiler, although it is a comment about like the broad nature of the show. Vaguely spoily, but it's going to be mostly safe for newbies unless you're like allergic to knowing anything about how this is going to go, then like give me 30 seconds or whatever. There is this moment between Bill and Eric where Bill starts saying something like, you know what would happen if anything ever happened to Sookie, and Eric just gives him this like great stare, and there's no broader context for that moment in this episode, but it I think hints to something that there might be something much larger going on here. Like, there might be an authority above Eric. There might be some power on Bill's side. You know, it's just like, it's weird to think that Bill could threaten Eric. So it's like, what is going on here? And that is just something to keep a pin in.
So I have three follow-up questions. One, did Eric learn the hard stare from Paddington? Two, did Paddington learn the hard stare from Eric? Three, is Paddington a vampire?
Ooh, I think two and three... yes.
Okay.
Excellent. Eric learned it from Paddington.
And Paddington
That's what
is
I meant
a
to say. Yes, Paddington could be a vampire, but like a very nice, cuddly bear one.
Not blood, marmalade.
Yeah, exactly. Like Colin Robinson is an energy vampire in What We Do in the Shadows.
Paddington
is a vampire for marmalade. It is his life's
I've sustenance. Just started watching What We Do in the Shadows season one, so I'm like up to about episode
fabulous.
7 when all of the celebrities suddenly cameo and I lose my mind.
There is a True Blood spoiler cameo in that episode. I mean, I don't think it's a spoiler to actually say that Evan Rachel Wood shows up in the show eventually. Like, that's actually a selling point.
Yes, it's a strong selling point, but yeah. The only other sort of spoiler thing, and again, like this, I'm not going to go into how, but yeah, Marianne is a huge plot in season two, and I think possibly the scariest villain in the show, purely just because it just gets a bit campy.
It's definitely the one that stands out.
Yeah. All right. Anything else you want to say about this episode as we rush towards our finale?
No, I don't think so. I'm just so excited to find out what's going to happen at the end.
Yeah. Right. Do you want to give some plugs?
Sure. You can find me various places online. Twitter, Letterboxd, Blue Sky at Mellow Yellow. And I have a podcast that puts occasional content up on the YouTubes called Wild Pretty Things. We also have a Patreon if you are interested in our back catalog from the last several years. So that's that. And then this here podcast, and that's it.
Yeah. And I'm Lozzie. You can find me on Blue Sky at Lozzymandias. I also have a podcast looking for joy and inspiration from Asimov, which is the Asimov cast. And I'm currently in between seasons on that. So I'm recording a couple of random episodes. One with a friend of this pod who's been on this pod, Tessa, who I talked to about AI and gender and society and stuff. And then Melissa and I are going to do something chaotic about I was going to say about the Foundation show, but really about Lee Pace, I think. So look out for that. That should be fun whenever we get around to doing it.
Yes, I'm very excited.
Okay. Thanks very much to DJ Empirical for our theme, which if you want to check it out at the beginning of the episode, still fucks. you can find the pod on Twitter, Instagram, and Blue Sky at FangBangersPod with a Z. And email us your chaotic, horny thoughts on Troopler, please, to FangBangersPod@gmail.com. Next week will be the season finale, You'll Be the Death of Me. I'm Lozzie, and my blood type is getting dirty too.
I'm Melissa, and my blood type is killing all my mortal enemies.
Bye.
Bye.